Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm your radio show. I'm your radio show.
Hello and welcome to the 909 podcast. It's episode 105 of the 909 podcast, presented by myself, Niall, and Andrea Cleary.
Hello, Niall.
That is your cue. How are you?
Nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, grand.
Yeah, you know, grand.
Lots of stuff happening in the world, most of it terrible, but we're just going to ignore all that. Because why wouldn't we?
It's that whole kind of, oh, I'm doing fine considering.
Yeah, let's bury our heads in the sand. It's fine. At least we have music though, and that's what we're here to discuss.
We do.
We're going to be reviewing the debut album from Pillow Queens later on the show. It is called In Waiting. We'll be chatting about that. And we've got some choice songs for you to discuss as well. And, you know, I mean, I think there's, you know, it's a funny old world at the moment where Jedward are making more sense than almost anyone else. Mm-hmm. I have to say, I mean, we may as well go into reasons to be cheerful from the off.
Yeah.
But before that, I should say we are actually talking to Niamh Regan as well, who later in the show, who was our album of the week last week, Hemet. From the Galway singer-songwriter was a favourite album of ours last week, and also one of the best Irish releases of the year. So wanted to have a quick chat with Niamh about that, so stay tuned for that. Yeah, so Jedward, their tweet to Ian Brown gave me a lot of joy, because the opposite is happening with Ian Brown and Noel Gallagher about masks and anti-vax and stuff like that. Refusing to wear masks and refusing to recognise the truth. Jedward just tweeted, "The public have lost all respect and credibility for your views. Your music and cheekbones are a dream, but your tweets are a nightmare." Thumbs up.
They're fantastic. Yeah. They're absolutely fantastic. I saw somebody tweeting something maybe yesterday. It was like, if you told me that Jedward were leading the Antifa movement in Ireland in 2020, I wouldn't have believed you, but here we are. they've had a lot to say about J.K. Rowling, and basically if there's somebody out there being a bollocks, Jedward are here to
defend us
all. To very politely call them out on it, which I love. I absolutely love. Still haven't listened to any of their music that they put out yet this year. So
I mean, they're really just personalities, right? They're not...
They are technically musicians.
Yeah, but
technically they have an album out.
They're most known for being personalities at this point. They're really good on social media.
They're so good.
And sending DMs. They started using they're the first people I saw to use the voice feature on Twitter. Just sending people little messages.
So I haven't gotten a DM yet from them.
Yeah, look, you know, it'll come. It'll come. You know, your time is coming up. It's autumn soon. You know, it's really, we're going to get into depths of autumn, and that's when Jedward are going to say hello to you.
I hope so. I hope they know how much that would mean to me.
Just waiting for the right time. That's all they're doing. Mm. Yeah, so in the meantime, there's loads of other stuff happening, which we're not going to get into, including Madonna is going to direct her own life story. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did. And she's writing it as well.
Yes.
No better woman, I suppose.
Yeah, there are so many untold and inspiring stories. And who better to tell it than me? Indeed.
Same. Who better than I?
Who better than I to tell the story of my life? Mm-hmm. It's essential to share the roller coaster ride of my life with my voice and vision.
Exactly. Is she also going to be in it, or is someone going to be playing her younger years?
That's not clear, but hopefully she won't be playing every part of her.
Come here. I would absolutely hope that she's playing every part in a kind of some kind of a Big Mama's House situation.
Wow, that, Big that Mama's would, House reference. Wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. here's an aside. I haven't thought about this in years. An ex-boyfriend of mine who doesn't listen to the podcast, so I can say this, once talked in his sleep, and he said the sentence, "Big Mama's house is making sorry, Big Mama's house is making a big comeback." And there was no new Big Mama's House movie or anything, just fully formed from his subconscious.
Wow.
Yeah, oh, I haven't thought about that in years. I'm so happy I remembered that now.
That's very specific.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hello to him if he does listen. Sorry for sharing that.
Wow, that is something else. I can't beat that. I can't beat that.
I'm a terrible chatter in my sleep.
Are you the kind of person that someone can talk to? Yeah. Have a full-blown conversation. Yeah.
I've had situations where I've been recorded on people's phones.
Yeah.
And they'll be having a conversation with me. And I'm like, I did not consent to this recording or this conversation. Thank you very much. But yeah, no, I've been known to have a little, not very often, maybe once every couple of years, I'll just get up out of the bed and go for a little walk and wake up somewhere else in the house.
Right.
Mildly terrifying. I do live on the fifth floor and I do have a balcony. So yeah. Let's hope that stays safe.
Yeah, well, what does it mean? What does it mean when you sleepwalk? Are you trying to run away from something?
It probably means I need to pee and I'm trying to find the bathroom, to be honest.
As long as you're not leaving your house.
Yeah.
Then that's not the worst thing.
You just want to stretch your legs a little bit, maybe. Yeah, I have no idea what it means.
Yeah, it's more common than you think, I think, isn't it? Like people
I think so.
Or than one would think, as opposed to you specifically. So what else is going on? Do we have reasons to be cheerful this week?
Well, yours was Jedward, was it?
Well, I have another reason to be cheerful.
Okay. Yeah, fire away.
On this day in 1985, Kate Bush released Hounds of Love.
Oh, my God.
So I just thought I'd just give that to you today. Which, of course, was partly recorded at Windmill Lane in Dublin. So,
yes.
You know, there is an Irish angle.
So it was the album, not the single, that was this day, was it?
Yes.
Wow. Oh, so my goodness.
I was three. And it was released in 1985. So there you go.
I was very much not yet born. So I've always existed in a world where Kate Bush's Hounds of Love has existed, which I do like. That is nice. Yeah, that's like one of my favorite albums of all time. I adore that album. I did once for this very podcast do a Kate Bush sort of primer, or was it a songs you mightn't love and you should, which people can go listen to if they want. I think it was one of our early episodes.
Indeed it was. That wasn't very enjoyable now.
That was good. Yeah, that was fun. I have two small reasons to be cheerful. Neither of them are music related. Okay. One is that I requested that Facebook delete my account and all associated data last month, and you have to wait a month to do it, or for them to do it, so that you can like log back in and chicken out of doing that. But I didn't, and it's gone now. And I know Facebook are no longer using my data to do their evil, evil deeds. And that made me quite cheerful today. So that's good. And the other one is, I don't know if you saw my tweet, but I remembered do you remember seeing the trailer for the film Promising Young Woman?
No.
Nothing to do with the Caroline O'Donoghue novel. It's an American film. Well, basically, this trailer came out like last, maybe last November, and it was genuinely the only film I have been excited to see in 2020. Like, I really, I'll go to see the Batman, I'll go to these things, but like, this was like, oh my God, it's coming out in April. I can't wait. And then the thing happened, and it didn't get a release. So I went onto Twitter and I was like, does anyone know what the story with this is? Because I'd assumed it was just not going to happen now. Because it is a film that is very kind of, it's a female protagonist or maybe antagonist. It is discussions around rape culture, but it's also a black comedy, and it's just one of those films that I worried would be pushed aside for things like Tenet and things like Candyman and the kind of the bigger releases. But it seems Irish film Twitter came to the rescue and all but assured me that it is going to be coming out next year. It's one of the best trailers I've ever seen. Absolutely go and watch the trailer after the podcast, because it's just like even the use of music in it is stunning. So that's my reason to be cheerful, is there's still hope for that film coming out, which is genuinely the only thing I was looking forward to in 2020.
Interesting cast: Carey Mulligan, Bo Burnham, Alison Brie, Clancy Brown, Jennifer Coolidge,
Adam Brody.
Adam Brody's not even mentioned on this list here.
What?
Laverne Cox. Yeah. This is just from a cursory Google search. Mm. But yeah, okay, sounds interesting. Very good.
Yes, it is definitely going to be. And anybody who responded to the tweet who has seen it has said that it was one of the best films they've seen this year.
How have people seen it? Like a press thing?
Yeah, it was screened at Sundance, and I think it was screened at the Dublin International Film Festival as well.
Okay, yeah.
So a couple of people have seen it and have said that it's amazing. So excited for that.
Speaking of your first point, have you watched the Netflix show The Social Dilemma?
Yes. Yes, I have. Yeah, I watched it the other day. It's very good.
Very good. Yeah, I watched it last night.
Yeah. Are you going to delete your social media accounts?
No, because I have to promote stuff, unfortunately.
What about Facebook? Oh, yeah, I suppose, yeah, there's people use 909 and Facebook quite a lot. So,
but yeah, not as much as they used to. It's so, I mean, they did a new design, it's so gross. Mm. Everything about Facebook is pretty terrible for me personally. But
it's bad.
Yeah.
Facebook's bad. It's like evil bad. It's not just like time wasting. It's so bad. Yeah, I do. I recommend that. I know we're kind of doing our, we usually do this at the end of the podcast, but fuck it. I do recommend people watching that, even just to kind of have, just to arm yourself with the information around what social media is actually doing for you, your mental health, and also for like global politics. It's probably a good idea to know about that and delete your Facebook.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, I think there's just like that Rabbit Hole podcast series from a while back. It's very similar tone to that, like how we have wildly differing stances and opinions in life at the moment, with many people diverging on different paths in terms of the truth that they relate to, or the truth that they think is truth, or you know, the narrative that people follow.
Yeah.
It's scary time for that, for sure.
It is.
So we're not going to add to it by bringing in any sort of speculation. We are going to talk about, we're going to review an album from a band who actually co-hosted this podcast back last year when things were
for the Fontaines DC album, if I'm not
that's
mistaken.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we should have got Fontaines on to review their album.
Oh my God, we should have. Oh my God. Oh well.
Well,
I don't think they'd return my calls, to be honest.
No, probably not. Well, the band in question are Pillow Queens, and the album is In Waiting, and we have been waiting for this debut album for a fair amount of time, I would say, but we're delighted it's finally here. And I'm going to play a song, which is the opening song from the album.
I'm still a baby. If you're still waiting outside, I've got your eyes and cheeks in front of me, filling the space between my thighs. I roll you up and crack you open. We look like a couple of teens just signed.
Pillow Queens is the band, and In Waiting is the album. The reason we're this isn't out till 25th of September, but because next week is such a stacked release, we are actually doing it this week as opposed to next week because we have other plans for next week. But yeah, there it's one of those weeks where there's nothing on this week in terms of regular stuff, and then there's loads next week. There's we've got new albums from Sufjan, Idols, Paddy Hanna, Sylvana. So Roisin Murphy's been moved out to the following week, so that's something. But there is so we thought we'd focus on Pillow Queens this week, and Pillow Queens of course are Pamela Connolly, Sarah Corcoran, Rachel Lyons and Cathy McGuinness, who have basically been making very nice melodic indie garage rock for maybe 3 years now, or maybe longer, probably longer. Actually, it's hard to know how long time is anymore. But 2017 was when they first came out with Calm Girls, the three-track EP. And then State of the State was 2019. This is an album then which was recorded with Tommy McLaughlin in Donegal. It's 10 tracks, which is a lovely length, not too long. And we're actually, I guess if you're a Pillow Queens fan, you'd be familiar with a lot of the songs from it. The single there, Holy Show, was one of the most recent ones. But there's also Handsome Wife, How Do I Look, Gay Girls and Brothers, which have been previously released. So we obviously, having had the band co-host a podcast before, are we somewhat biased?
I hope not. I mean, I feel like if we didn't love this album, we just wouldn't have covered it. That tends to be my my kind of policy when it comes to like Irish. Well, for me personally, when it comes to like Irish musicians who I think are lovely, if I don't like their stuff, I just won't cover it. But thankfully, I love this album, and like I've been saying, like, I don't know, many podcasts I've said like Pillow Queens album is out this year, and like that it's just for me one of the year's most kind of one of the most exciting, like, especially debuts, because I feel like Pillow Queens are one of those bands that just kind of seem to emerge fully formed with this unique sound, this style and this charisma, that it's hard to imagine any growing pains with this band. Like, you know, their first EP, Calm Girls, was just so, to me, it was just so indicative of like a band that was really confident in their own sound, really confident playing together and writing together. And from there, the only way was up, kind of thing. So I've been really, really looking forward to this. And yeah, like you said, there's a few songs on this that we have heard already, but I think they're kind of contextualized in a new and interesting way when they're with, is it five or four songs that we've heard already? I know you listed them off there.
Five.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have heard half the album, and the other half of the album is just as good, which is great. And I think it ebbs and flows really beautifully. And
two distinct halves as well, I would think it's fair to say. There's,
sorry?
There's a long, nice long outro to Liffy,
yeah,
on the album. So it kind of feels like side A and side B,
yeah,
which I think is intentional.
It does, yeah. Yeah, I think this is such a brilliant debut, and I can imagine that there has been a bit of pressure on this band, considering, you know, like I said, not only did they emerge fully formed, but they kind of emerged with fans. They were booked, yeah, for Once to Watch gigs before they'd played a gig. They just had this buzz around them. So I can imagine that it's nerve-wracking putting out a debut album for fans who have been following you and supporting you for 3 years. But I think that this album really rewards those fans. Did I listen to it or did I read it? An interview anyway, with a couple of members of the band about how the album was kind of put together and selected. And there was a live stream with some fans, and I'm not sure if it was like a voting, I should have checked this, sorry, but I'm not sure if it was like a kind of a voting system thing, but they had input from their fans and from their supporters as to what songs were going to be included. And I think that the notable exclusion on this album is the song Rats, which is, I think, one of their first kind of hits, or one of the first songs that a lot of people would have heard from them.
Absolutely.
But besides that, the exclusion of that song, which maybe actually wouldn't have fit the tone as well. I'm not sure where I'd put it if I was putting it on this, maybe as an opener. But I think the tone on this is really consistent. You know, they have this really great way of being sort of tough, but also quite vulnerable at the same time, and taking experiences that are universal, but every now and then just kind of nodding to maybe the language that we use in Ireland or specifically in Dublin to discuss those experiences. That's my opening thoughts anyway. What about you, Niall? Are you digging it?
Yeah, of course. I am. Yeah,
I knew you would.
I'm a big fan of Pillow Queens. I think, like, I've seen them live a good number of times now. I had them play for myself at the Dublin Sound event probably, it was over a year and a half ago now, when a lot of their fans showed up, and it was just really sweet. It was like, that was an all-ages gig, and it was just really nice to see that. And obviously, there's probably a lot of gay girls there as well who, you know, identify with the band. And I think that's really a lovely part of it as well. That's maybe, you know, it's not obvious from the music or anything really, other than the fact that it's called Gay Girls. But, you know, it is, you know, there's a band you can cheer on, and a band that teenagers can, identify with and be inspired by as well, which is something that's really good. Not only that, but obviously I actually think you're right. Yeah, Gay Girls is the only song from the earlier stuff that's on this album, but you know, you could have had Favorite there as well. But it's kind of nice when that happens, I think, that, like, you don't want your debut album sometimes to be totally full of songs that you've been released before. Kind of hard to get too excited about it sometimes, but I think, yeah, as the way this flows, I think this works really well. Holy Show is the opening track. I think that's there's 3-4 great songs on this easily, but there's no bad songs on this ultimately. Holy Show, Handsome Wife, How Do I Look, and Gay Girls and Brothers are all in there. And then getting to know songs like Liffy, which I really like at the moment, and Child of Prague as well. I think I just think it's a wonderful example of a band doing what they do. There's no great thematic and big narrative applied to it or anything like that. Just 10 really solid songs, really positive debut album. And it sounds wonderful. Drums sound brilliant on this as well. I think there's a lot to be said for the production on this by Tommy McLaughlin and with the band as well. I think it sounds the way it should, and it's very pleasing for me. I'm just very happy for them. I think it's really great to finally get to the point where there is a Pillow Queens album ready and here. And we are finally arrived with the album. So, this is going to be one of those ones that I think a lot of people are going to be listening to for the next few months.
I think so too, and I think it is like a lot of albums we've been discussing in the past 6 months. It is a shame that we're not going to get to hear these songs in a context that I really, really want to hear them. I mean, you were talking there about the all ages gigs that they played, and a Pillow Queens show is a really special show. I think it liveness is really built into their music. Like their music is quite anthemic. Like, you could take that outro in Gay Girls, and just like, it's such a powerful thing to kind of sing along to, with communities that you might not know in real life, or just fans that are coming together around this band and around this kind of this expression of a certain identity that isn't exactly, you know, prevalent in the music industry. There's always something a bit cathartic about seeing Pillow Queens live, and I think it is a great shame that I imagine they are going to play some gigs, but it's a shame that I'll have to see them sitting down, and I can't be, you know, up the front screaming in their faces and things. And because, I mean, this is a band that makes me feel like a fan, like a proper fan who like wears the merch and just really, really kind of, because they give so much back is the thing. Like they do the thing that I want my favorite bands to do. Like they support social activism. They speak out about injustices. They do the work for their community, like the music community at large, but also representation of gay and queer women in music. And they do the work for their scene as well. They're always supporting emerging artists. They feel like a band that if I was a teenager, if I was a 14-year-old girl, that I could go up to them after a show and be like, hey, I want to learn to play the guitar. What should I do? And they'd be like, well, learn to play the guitar. Why not? I find them really inspiring. And yeah, this album, I think just it encompasses so much. So many things about rock music that I love. I love the kind of slacker sound of it. The vocals on it, I will never not be charmed by that lilt. By that inherent Irishness and how it just transcends its own place into its own thing. I really, really love that. And I think, like you mentioned the drums there, they are produced impeccably. And those kind of beautifully melodic guitar lines that sometimes actually veer into maybe even like a Mac DeMarco territory on some songs here that I really, really love. It's just I wish I could see it live in a big sweaty room. I know I will someday, so that's given me a bit of hope. But it's a really exciting album, and it really makes me feel positively about Irish music. And I mean, I think that that's probably the biggest praise that I can give an album, because it just it makes me feel like it transcends them being an Irish band, or you know, a female led band, or like a queer band. It's just a great album, and it is also these other things, but it is essentially, like, at its core, brilliant music making.
Absolutely. And worth saying that, you know, not only is it like a really good Irish album, it's a really good international album as
absolutely.
Well. This is a band who've been getting loads of interest from abroad. And, you know, their style definitely fits in with the UK vibe as well. And they get lots of BBC Six music play, stuff like that. And I hope it continues for them, because they're well able for it. And they're wiping a lot of these UK bands who have a lot of hype. Who get nominated for Mercury Music Prize.
Mopping the floor with them.
Mopping the floor with Porridge Radio and stuff like that. Look, they're just a better band, and these are better songs. And
and they're a better band than they were a year ago. And a year ago, they were a better band than they were a year before. And I think that's what's so exciting about them, is that they kind of sprung up with this excitement and with this kind of... this work ethic, and they haven't slowed down. They just have this incredible momentum, and I've just nothing but confidence for their career going forward. I reckon this album is going to be really, really loved by fans and critics, and it'll do well.
Impromptu pop quiz for you.
Oh.
Which artist, you're not going to get this. It's good. The odds are stacked against you here.
Jesus. My favorite
Rachel and
kind
Kathy from
of
the band,
pop quiz.
Rachel and Kathy from the band apparently met on a fan forum for a particular Irish artist. Do you know
particular
who that artist
Irish
is?
Artist?
Yes.
I'm going to say fan forum. Fan forums haven't been a thing since the 2000s.
Yes.
So... I'm going to say...
Do you want a clue? Do you want a bit more of a clue?
Yeah.
It's a woman artist.
I immediately assumed that, so that's actually not helpful.
Okay, I thought I'd help a little bit.
Enya.
Good shout, but no, not Enya.
Mary
no.
Black?
No, but I would like to hear Pillow Queen's cover an Enya song.
Absolutely.
I want to do an Enya compilation. all the Irish bands doing Enya covers. I'd like to hear that. Sorry, the
Make
answer
that happen,
is.
Niall.
I've been thinking about it this week.
You know Irish artists. A lot of them owe you a favor, right? Get them all together.
Yeah, I might do that. It is Gemma Hayes, actually.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so yeah, there you go. That was revealed in a London in Stereo. Five songs that inspired Pillow Queens would also included Big Thief's masterpiece, Mitski, Your Best American Girl, Hop Along, Kids on the Boardwalk, and Manchester Orchestra, in case you want to find that and have a look at that. So yeah, that is Pillow Queens. I think, yeah, we will be listening to Pillow Queens, and hopefully, yeah, I definitely want to hear them, see them live again.
I really want to hear songs from this album get played on the radio as well, because I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. What is your standout track?
I'll give you two. I'll give you one that's been released and one that hasn't. Let me think. I think Holy Show, in terms of the singles that we've had, I'm just absolutely adore that. Brothers was released. Let me think. I quite like the closer, Donna Mead.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Donna Mead for the non-released one, but I mean there's not a button on it.
No, there isn't. Absolutely not.
What about you?
I will pick Liffey is the one for me, not released at the moment, and Holy Show opener. Yeah. It's such a strong opener. So I think that's great. And I also love this track, which is How Do I Look?
Took a while, but I don't mind. How do I look now? How do I look now?
Okay, that's Pillow Queens. The album is out on 25th of September. It is called In Waiting. And check it out when it comes out on Friday. Next, so on to the songs of the week from us. Before that, I want to say patreon.com/909 for your support. Loads of people have been supporting us recently, and it really is important and appreciate it that you, if you are enjoying what we're doing on the podcast or on the website, that you if you are in a position to, from a five or a month, support us, and you get exclusive playlists, and you will actually be getting, you know, maybe some other exclusives and maybe some Pillow Queen exclusives next week. So sure, look, you just have to join and find out. Okay, that's patreon.com/909. Up next is our first song of the week. It is from Sufjan.
That's Sufjan Stevens.
Sufjan Stevens. It is a Video Game.
I don't want to be the center. Change.
Okay, that is Sufjan Stevens, and I say okay a lot when I come out of the songs, don't I?
I hadn't noticed, but I have been receiving a lot of letters about it, so yeah, maybe, oh, yes. Maybe stop it.
Yeah, there's a pile of letters there. What would a Sufjan Stevens video game look like?
Right? I mean, it would be set in Illinois, and I think you would shoot love hearts at just people in the street, and they would transform from being sad looking to being happy looking, but like, you know, that the happy emoji that still has the tear.
Yeah.
Those would be like your
happy sad.
Yeah, I don't know, I'd like a Sufjan Stevens video game.
There definitely would involve some wings anyway. Yeah,
but he doesn't want to be a video game. And we have no, to respect those wishes. I really like this song because I think like there's a couple of different levels you can listen to it on, but I quite enjoy listening to it on like the very, very surface level of like, I don't want to talk about video games. I don't want to talk about the new Call of Duty, which I don't think is the intention of the song, but I think it does.
Probably not.
It does wrap up quite well my opinion on like when new games are released and everyone's talking about them, and I'm like, oh, just shut up. But yeah, this is quite blippy and bloppy.
Yeah, it's fairly electro poppy kind of laid back kind of buzz going on here. Very direct. Mm-hmm. It's not as experimental for sure, which I guess is something that we've been told is happening with the album.
Maybe it's experimental for him. Like, there's no acoustic guitar.
It's definitely more. It sounds like more other artists than maybe you would be used to from Sufjan. Mm. The Ascension is out as well next week. That is the album as well, so it'll be interesting to. I think we may be reviewing it next week and discussing that in full, the 8th album from Sufjan. So we will see how this all shakes up in terms of the overall sound. I know, wasn't there talk that the album had some sort of influence from Ariana Grande and stuff like that, or was that just one of those things that was said and then never mentioned again? It was on Twitter, I think. Gorilla vs Bear deleted a tweet that said the new Sufjan album said he's been inspired by Ariana. But then, you know, when artists say that, sometimes you're like, what? Can't hear it.
Yeah.
So
I feel like Sufjan Stevens can say he's inspired by anything, and I'm like, okay, well, like, that's he's just so kind of singularly existent within his own sonic realm and sonic sound. And that's actually something that I quite like about this song, in that, you know, it is this kind of like synth pop song that might not have necessarily been expected from him, quite up tempo, but it still sounds exactly like Sufjan Stevens. And I think he's just one of those artists who can experiment in that way. And he can say, yeah, my new album's inspired by Ariana Grande or whoever, and I'm just like, okay, well, I think it's still going to sound like you, and I think it's still going to sound within your kind of remit. I like this song. I don't adore this song. Maybe it'll grow on me. I do like it. It's just,
it's not quite the emotional gut punch that you would expect.
Could have been
for this year.
It could have been, because I think he's making interesting points in an interesting way, and I don't dislike the music either. And I'm not one of these people who needs Sufjan Stevens to kind of be crying on an acoustic guitar all the time. But maybe it was just a little bit too. There was a slight monotony that started to creep in after a little while with it. Maybe in the...
Yeah, I think I need to hear the album overall to see where this fits in.
Yeah, and I mean, it might be one of those things where it fits in great. I could see this fitting in as a kind of a Brooklyn Bridge to Chorus did in the Strokes album, where it is that little bit more kind of electro-inspired, but it makes sense in terms of the album. And then, you know, that song ended up becoming my favorite song off that album. So, but yeah, no, I'm really, really excited to listen to it. I thought I'd have to wait until next week, but apparently it's in my email. So I'm going to go.
It should be.
That's exciting.
Well, that's what Sufjan describes as his lush editorial pop album. So we'll see what that sounds like next week. Okay, our next track is a song from Kevin Morby, and it's called Campfire.
In the sky was 1,000 years old, always kept time in my back pocket. No man, goddamn, came to take my soul. Shut the door, then lock it. And where have all of my friends gone? And where did all of my friends go? And where have all of my friends gone? They billow. Thought that I saw Jessie, she was sitting in a crowd. Thought that I saw Jessie, then I got to feeling proud. To ever have known someone so pretty and so sweet, who every time she sang a song, it'd sweep me off my feet. But oh my, my, oh I guess that she did her time, now she's laid to rest. There's a campfire inside her soul.
Okay, Andrea, who is Kevin Morby and why is he sitting around a campfire?
So Kevin Morby is an American singer-songwriter. He has had 5 albums so far, but I think he's one of those artists that just kind of slips under people's radar a little bit. I find him really, really charming. I think his music is the right level of folk and spooky for me. He's got a really, really wonderful voice that kind of reminds me a little bit of, like, do you know the band Timber Tambor?
Yeah,
a little bit of that kind of spooky folk sound. And he's just really great. So this is his new song, which is in the video. So he's going out with as well Katie Crutchfield, who is Waxahachie, and she's in the video for this, and I don't know this for certain, but those might be her vocals around the switch in the middle, and this song is kind of two songs in one. Niall and I were saying there while it was playing that it's a little bit confusing when you're listening to it, because the song seems to end and then pick up and it's a completely different song, so you're kind of getting two minute long songs in one for this. So yeah, this is from his upcoming album, Sundowner, which is coming out on October 16th, which is a good month for Kevin Morby to release an album, I think. And I really like it. It's not doing too much different to what he's done before. I think that this song definitely could have been on his 2019 album, Oh My God. But I don't need him to sound any different than he did before, because I think he's pretty much nailed his sound and nailed his the mood and the setting that is kind of right for his music. What about you? Were you familiar with Kevin?
Really one of those artists in name only, that I, you know, pops up every now and again and you're like, one of those American artists that Pitchfork would feature or the likes, and I'm just like, I either pass me by or just never really get a chance to listen to.
And would this song convince you to go and have a look?
Yeah, it's nice. It's probably not totally my vibe, but it's kind of, if it came on a playlist, I wouldn't turn it off. It has a bit of a Dylan vibe to it as well, which I quite enjoyed. And he's a lovely head of hair.
Fabulous head of hair. Very, very handsome boy now, has to be said. Very handsome boy. There's a couple of really great, I actually haven't seen him live, but he's one of those artists who I like to watch live on YouTube. And there's some great performances that he has up on YouTube that I think if I was recommending somebody to get into Kevin Morby, I'd maybe say watch his live shows. online as opposed to going straight into an album. But I mean, it depends on what convinces you with an artist. But I think he is so charming and so forthcoming and is just such an artist when he's performing. He strikes me as somebody who is most at home doing that. So, I really love him. I think he's great. And I actually didn't discover him until he was recommended to me about a year ago by my friend Sarah Marie. So thank you, Sarah Marie, for that.
Thanks, Sarah Marie. That's lovely. It's always nice to get a recommendation. Love it.
Yeah.
Okay, our third song this week is from Gorillaz featuring Robert Smith of The Cure. It is called Strange Times.
I think I've fallen onto silken thread. My head is spinning, suspended in a twilight web that keeps on giving. The looping dervish in the lodge is lost within the ringing. Far away I can hear the sound of someone out there singing. I'm speeding through the forest, strange echoes of better roots, where presidents pin badges on disconnected youth. What will you be dreaming of? No horseplay, no diving, cutting glass with scissors whilst the great leaders reclining. In golden hallways where we spin, the faithful will be silent, existing and not at the same time.
The unmistakable voice of Robert Smith of The Cure, teaming up with Gorillaz as part of their Song Machine series. Turns out there will be a Song Machine season one, which kind of is an album. Basically, the whole of this year, they've been doing a series of collaborations, a load of different people, Schoolboy Q, Octavian, they had Fatuma Diawara, who else did they have? Skepta and Tony Allen was involved, Georgia, and Peter Hook. I'm not really sure what the vibe is. I guess it's good that it's not necessarily a new Gorillaz album, although it is obviously going to be released as an album. It seems to be just a series of collaborations that they've been working on in the last while, but upcoming ones on the album include Beck and Elton John. So that could be interesting. It's just, but yeah, every song has like Slaves and Slow Thai, Beck, St. Vincent's on it as well. I don't know. There's loads of people on this. I don't know if you heard the Disclosure album from recently. I used to think when this Chemical Brothers released tours in their later period, when they started, every song had a guest verse or guest on it, and you're like, let's just tone it down. You don't need a guest on every song. And obviously, this is a build as a collaborative kind of like a season thing that they're doing. So I'm not sure. I kind of like the wonkiness and discombobulation of that song, Strange Times. And there has been some good ones like Aries with Peter Hook and Georgia I quite liked. And actually, I like the vocals of Octavian on that he did as well. But, you know, there's kind of hit and miss things happening here in terms of Gorillaz. I'm not sure where it's going, but the... There is also other songs that like Jonas Policewoman, JPEG Mafia, Unknown Mortal Orchestra involved as well. It's just a dizzying array of people who are involved in this. So I'm not sure. This seems to be very much a studio thing, which just probably makes sense right now that there's not going to be any gigs. There's not going to be any Gorillaz gigs right now. So they're just going to keep releasing stuff, I guess. But it's not, I don't think this is a patch on anything any of their best work really, but I guess in some way it's kind of it kind of suits the Spotify streaming era, because it's just like every few weeks there's a new Gorillaz song and it's like, there it is. All right. And then it comes with like weird, you know, the kind of annoying Gorillaz character commentary that they do and stuff like that.
I'm sort of done with that now at this stage. I like
no one needs
like the kind of aesthetic look of those characters, and I do like when they they do things at the live shows and stuff, but I don't really need them in the album, to be honest. I don't know what to make of this song. I like the kind of the flow of the more poetic driven bit, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da bit. I'm like, okay, but I don't really know what it's doing. I don't really see myself listening to it a whole lot, but it's definitely interesting to my ear. Like, there's a lot going on, and I think maybe it's trying to blindside me into thinking that it's interesting when it actually isn't.
That's possibly fair.
Yeah, I haven't drilled down into it enough. But I mean, like,
I think I just wanted to pick this week because there's been a lot of these releases in this year, and I was just like, what is going on with Gorillaz? There's just like so many tracks and so many things that they're releasing.
Yeah.
Like, this is the sixth edition of this song machine, like, kind of episodes, they're calling it. And like, I just was like, what are they doing? What's happening here? Is this like somebody just like getting into the studio and making tunes? Or like, do these have an ultimate place at that? And it turns out they are. The album is going to be released, but it seems just to be a collection of stuff, so I'm not sure
what's going on either. I mean, I was having a conversation with some friends at the weekend, and the consensus was that Damon Albarn is a genius, but I find him so frustrating sometimes, especially with Gorillaz, because I actually think that Gorillaz can be really hit and miss, and I don't know if this type of thing is necessarily for me. I mean, they've always collaborated a lot, and I think that they have collaborated well in the past, but maybe setting yourself a target or a list of people who you want to collaborate with, like, would that then like lock you into having to release what you've made together? And
yeah, maybe that's a way of an obligation of actually releasing.
Yeah,
it
like just, I'm just like, I'm a little bit cynical about like collaboration for collaboration's sake. And I mean, you can't really do a collaboration with Robert Smith and not put it out. I don't think. I mean, if I was managing either of those artists, I wouldn't let that happen. So yeah, I don't know. I feel really up in the air about this and about this project. I'm not against these kinds of projects generally. And especially at a time like now, like you were saying, it is so hard to, like, I'm not expecting anybody to be making music at the moment. Like, people just need to be looking after themselves. But yeah, I'm just a little bit underwhelmed, but still slightly interested. I've very, very conflicting, contradictory feelings about this whole thing, I think.
Yeah, fair. There's no overall narrative, which is something that Gorillaz albums, their best Gorillaz work, has always had, and there's nothing like that at stake here. So it kind of makes you wonder what the point of it is. So yeah, that's Gorillaz and Song Machine. Season 1 is an album coming in October 23rd. So you can check out that. And finally this week, more really just a nod to something that we did a whole podcast special about last year, an album from a Dubliner called Dave Balfe. For Those I Love is the project. It has finally been announced that the album is coming in full and on a proper physical release later this year. It is a beautiful, touching album, an ode to friendship, an ode to growing up with a bunch of friends who were creative and coming from a working class background and maybe not seen with the same eyes as everyone else. For Those I Love, the album, is a lot of it is centered around Paul Curran, the Dublin poet and musician who passed away a few years ago. And the main artist here, Dave Balfe, who was an amazing producer, who had a 47-minute mixtape out about 2 weeks ago, featuring odds and ends from some of his projects, including For Those I Love. It's just, there's lots of interesting stuff going on here. I'm going to play, this is the opening track anyway. Definitely worth looking at the video for the song. This is the opening track from the For Those I Love album. It's called I Have Love.
I'm gonna quiz that thing a buzzer with Tesco. Oh, alright, guys. Yeah, you put the challenge straight away on it. Break down to that.
Yeah. I can't calm that.
Man.
No. Look at this. Look at your smirk in the mirror. I'm like, that's very pushed up.
Step to your man, I know.
Did you get that on the camera?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Bit louder, man. It'll be cold, man.
I have a love, and it never fades. From the space where we learned to be brave and face guards, grief and knaves, and late days that could shame and break saints with the weight of the city's hate.
But I Have a Love is the name of the song. That is for those I love. The video, I will urge you all to go watch it. And also, if you want to hear the background and the context for the album, our podcast from last year, it's probably June or July last year, For Those I Love podcast special. Do go and listen to that. A lot of people are very excited to hear this album is back, and I'm delighted to see it as well. So that's it. That's For Those I Love. Have you watched the video?
I have, yeah. I found myself reading the lyrics a lot as well. Like, you can just kind of read them like a poem as well. And yeah, it's really affecting, weighty, important work that is also, like, at once a joy and quite difficult to listen to. So yeah, it's really beautiful. It's really, really beautiful.
Yeah. I think that video really does underscore a lot of the nature of the music and the sentiment behind the project itself. Mm-hmm. So do go watch that as well. That is For Those I Love. Now we're going to have a quick chat with Niamh Regan, whose album we reviewed last week. It is called Hemet. We were enthralled by it, and we thought we'd get Niamh in for a quick chat to explain a bit more about the process and where she came from and why, and how she's feeling about the album right now. So this is Niamh Regan and myself and Andrea having a chat.
Got to get some, got to be someone, got to stand up and shoulder this world, got to be perfect. Just to get things done, I've got to stand out. I gave him my word and he said any help from you would do. Any way to get it through. And you sure look up, but soft inside. You're now ready, running high. Gotta get some, got to be some.
I guess it's just really us saying congratulations and thanks for the album, because as we reviewed it last week, as you know, and I just wanted to catch you and see how you're getting on, and congratulations to you, and just tease a bit more out of you about the album itself. How long was it finished for then? You had it for a while?
It was fully recorded and mixed a few times almost a year ago.
Wow.
So yeah, well,
that's it, like, because that's the thing that most musicians are like, I cannot wait a year for something to be released.
I could. And here, there's a great thing as well, like, when nobody knows you or nobody is expecting it, or it's not like meeting a deadline, do you know what I mean? There's great comfort in that as well. Like, you want to get it right, but nobody's being like, Jesus, where is that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So with the recording, there was a lot of people involved in it. Did you know them all in advance?
No.
And how did it all come about?
I suppose it came about with the Blackgate which is a venue in Galway, and they just kind of got behind my music and gave me a bit of confidence in myself and said, you know what, you know, it'd be great to have an album and we'd get behind you doing this. And they kind of said, whoever you want on the album, you know, we'll try and source them, kind of thing. Basically, the producer that I went with is one of my best friends, Alex Borwick, and he just knew a few people from recording and through the Dublin scene, and he said, these lads are top their game, and if you want, and the Black Gate are happy to like give them a day rate, you know, they like the sound of the demos. And I was just, you know, ecstatic that anyone of that kind of standard would want to play with me, like, and I was well chuffed when they came and it worked, and we actually really gelled, and kind of gave me confidence for the rest of the album. Then when I was working mainly just with Alex, we usually just work together. He's great with synths and just coming up with percussion ideas, and we kind of work off each other. We both play a good few different instruments, me badly, him fairly well, and with the combination. Cathal Gilmore and Pat Daly and Dominic Mullen are, I think they're all Dublin based, and they came down to Galway willingly, and they brought it to life for sure. Yeah, they gave it a new kind of, they brought it to the next level. You know, so it wasn't just me, you know, indulging myself on a microphone.
You mentioned there that you're in college and you're studying alongside your career as a musician. When you were writing the album, was that the case as well? Were you studying and working alongside it? And what was that experience like?
To be honest, it was tough enough because I lost my mom during that time. So after she passed away, I took some time out of school, and I took 6 months off. So, and then I wrote most of the songs during that time when I was, and then I went back to school and got back on the horse with life a bit. And so it's grand. It's been good, because you say career there, and that sounds wildly generous, because I don't know if it'd be a career. I've been tipping away with music, but it's never been a full-time thing. It's been a real luxury in my life, like, as in any gig that I got was a little yay moment or anything, you know, it was a celebration. It was like, it's definitely a glorified hobby. And obviously I'd love if it wasn't, but I'm okay with that too, if it stays that way. It's a nice part of my life.
Do you know any full-time musicians you like? Like, you know, people who work in music full time, because it is a tough thing. Most people don't.
I know lots of people, and that they commit to it, and they say, and they teach an awful lot of music too. You know, they're. But yeah, I do know lots, and they're doing it. I just don't know if I could enjoy it as much if, you know, that this hustle. I much prefer kind of like, I don't know, maybe I'll feel like hustling a bit more after this album. I don't know, it's a tough life. You need to be tough skinned, and you need to be well used to getting no's and ignored. And I find that really easy when I have other things going on. I don't mind getting ignored when I have other things going on in my life. And I think for my mental health, I need to be busy or focused and growing in other areas, or you'd just be hammered down altogether, because it's tough.
You mightn't have a whole lot to write about either. If
true, you can't be, you know. You need something to sing about. Yeah.
For sure.
Do you want to tell us where the title of the album comes from? Because it's sort of an interesting story, right? It wouldn't be obvious.
So Hemet is just the name of the place where my husband is from, and it's just quirky, being a generous word, or a nice, gentle word to describe it. Desert town in Southern California. Basically, he helped me write two of the songs on the album, and a lot of the songs, I suppose, materialized or developed or were inspired by my trips back and forth to Hemet. And it's not Hemet itself as a geographical location, or the people in it aren't the reference point of any of the songs per se. It was just a word that I think, oh, that's lovely. And it's a tip of the cap to my family over there and the friends that are all musicians and very eager to support and be passionate about music. So I thought, why not? Because I didn't want it to be some whimsical, poetic thing, when that's not what I'm about necessarily.
Do you think you would have things would have been different for you in terms of the album coming out had you released it this time last year? What are the differences you find? Like, obviously, we're releasing in a very different world right now. But what are you missing from this at the moment? What would you have liked to have done?
I would have loved to be doing, you know, gigs and going out and meeting people and like getting that energy and testing the songs in front of a real audience. Like, that's always a really exciting element of the whole process. But I think if I, being really honest, if I brought it out last year in the midst of all the festivals and all these gigs and exciting things, it'd have gotten lost. I feel like maybe the fact that I put it out in a time where people were actually sitting at home and listening to albums from the beginning to the end and maybe had a little bit more quiet time to themselves, it actually might have worked a bit, you know, because I'm thinking positively. I think maybe this might have been a good thing for me. I might be wrong, but I think maybe it might have worked because I've gotten more gig offers in my entire life in the last week for the future and live streams and all this than I ever got. I'm hoping that, yeah, that maybe I'm one of the lucky ones. I don't know.
Do you think you'd like to do more of these things then in the future in terms of the live stuff? Would you have a full band? Because I've seen you before, you played just solo in Body and Soul at the Picnic a number of years ago. Is that your plan for live, or are you going to do more?
We have a band, but because of the restrictions and everything, it's very hard to maneuver a full band, especially when you're not a well-cohesive, practiced band and everything, and we all live in very different parts. So for the Roisin gig, for example, the man who played bass, Cayman Gilmore, he'll join me for those smaller gigs when it suits. And then when we get past this, hopefully in January, we'll have the full band. And that's really exciting to me because, like, and also I've only really played the piano for the last 2 years. So it's been great having that in my gigs and playing. That was a big, like, I wrote my diary, I think when I was 14, I was like, play the piano on stage. And like, that felt like a really nice thing to tick off. And since I started writing with the piano, I feel like my songs have gotten better too. It's definitely been kind of, it's an instrument, I think, that suits my little scribbles. So, it's been great kind of, and I did a few support slots for Mick Flannery, and he's been a real inspiration of how he deals with his gigs, in the sense of, like, he'll do a solo on the guitar, he'll do a solo on the piano, then he'll have the band, and then he'll go back. Like, it's if you're going to ask people for their attention, which I've learned, for more than 30 minutes, you're going to have to give them a show. And that doesn't mean you have to have confetti or anything, like lights or whatever, but you need to, everyone has a short attention span now, so it's like, I walk to the piano, I go to the guitar, and now we have a band, and like the momentum builds, and it feels more like a party rather than like me kind of being like, I'm losing them on my third song here, and oh Jesus, am I a three-trick chord pony or whatever that phrase is. And you know, you just start doubting yourself, even though you're like, oh, I've practiced so much, how is this not connecting? So I'm like that, and that's just years of doing support slots and seeing people and taking notes, and like, I feel like each year I mature a bit more musically when it comes to performance. So hopefully once everything clears up, I'll be able to apply that.
in a lot of the kind of, in a lot of the press around the album, and including ourselves last week, there's been comparisons to certain artists. I think Nick Drake was a big one. Is there any particular artist that you were listening to in the year of writing it and then recording it that inspired the overall sound?
Actually, there were a few albums that were in rotation. I was listening to a lot of Wilco, Arcade Fire and Phoebe Bridgers. And also, I never stopped listening to Tom Waits ever. So he's always been on the go. And who else? Yeah, I went through a mad phase of Wilco. Like, I saw the documentary ages ago about what album was it that they were making. I can't remember. Have you seen the Wilco documentary?
I haven't seen the documentary, but I am a big Wilco fan.
So good. And I just like, oh, I am going to be, you know, I'm going to be 40 and going to be a rock star by Wilco. Like, really, and also just being in America back and forth, I think that kind of indie chug and grungy stuff kind of started rubbing off on me, because before that I used to listen to a lot of trad, like, I mean, hardcore trad, that'll be a lot that'll be going on in my headphones. But yeah, so I suppose that, and I kind of had a moment with Phoebe Bridgers of like, oh my god, there's no one else who can write a song like this, and like, what am I doing? Like, tears. You know, the first time I really, and then I kind of got over, and then I was like, eh, maybe, maybe not. And then she put out Punisher, and I was like, no, I am quite into her.
I had a similar thing with Phoebe. It's so funny, because I remember the first time I heard Motion Sickness, I was like, well, this is the best song ever written. There's nothing that can touch this. And then I kind of forgot about her for a while, and then she came back with the Boy Genius EP, and then I forgot about her for a while, and then when Punisher came out this year, Niall and I reviewed it on the podcast this year, and we love her. Like, it should be somewhere in our tagline that we are an official Phoebe Bridgers fan club. We absolutely adore her.
Yeah,
she's amazing.
The whole thing, everything about her. So they're the kind of people, I suppose, who influenced, that would have been different before, that were the kind of new ingredient of what I was listening to.
Yeah. And what about now? What kind of things are you listening to now? Are you listening to anything new?
There's none that I've been kind of playlisting things at the moment, like as in I've just been settling into playlists. And also I found I don't know about you guys, it must be quite difficult because you listen to so much music, that there's weeks where I listen to the same song and walk away from music altogether and process it all, and like find, like, because when I listen to music I want to listen to it, like I find it actually quite distracting if it's in the background and everyone's talking, and it's not like, I don't feel that chill, I feel like, oh, so when I listen to it I like to really listen or be on my own. I find it unless you're at a live thing, that's different, but you know. The last week I haven't actually been, I kind of took a step away from it, I suppose, in a weird way. Yeah.
That happens to me sometimes where because I listen to so much music, there are weeks where music just kind of happens near me. Even if it's in my headphones, even if I'm really trying, it's just sort of happening near me. But every now and then, I don't know if you ever get these days where it just, something changes, there's just some kind of magic, and all music just suddenly sounds amazing again, and you remember why you love it so much. And I get those days maybe every couple of months or something, and they're always after one of those lulls where I'm just like, I'm so tired of music, all the music is the same to me, and then all of a sudden it just explodes again, and I remember how many artists and bands there are out there to discover. And I think that those are the days that kind of keep you going through, not only just through music, but just keep you going generally, you know.
Yeah, I can count the last time that happened. Like,
yeah,
like really, you know, I had a day where I just discovered loads of new stuff, and it was like, this is so exciting.
That's amazing. You
know, all this stuff, it happens a lot.
It's an emotional wave, like, I think, and you kind of absolutely the dips.
Yeah, it's like I was saying to you, Niamh, you know, you know, not being able to go to gig, not being able to do these things that keep my mental health in good shape means that, you know, these are the only little wins you get when you hear an album that you really like yours, when you hear a song that you really like, and or you watch a live stream that, you know, you really enjoy from, say, somebody like Langham, whatever it is. You know, in terms of music, you know, I'm really conscious now of how aware, and I'm really aware of how music affects my mental health on a day-to-day in a positive fashion. And when you don't have the live version, it's quite different to not feel that. You don't feel it as much, maybe, because you're not going to 4 gigs a week like you used to. But it is just been something I've been noticing in myself, just like the things that are important to me are the things that you, first of all, you miss, but also music's always there. I'd be absolutely lost without music. I wouldn't know what to do.
Mad times, lads.
It's just, yeah, it is crazy. It's so weird because, you know, pre-pandemic, you could do an interview with a musician or an artist or somebody, and, you know, the word pandemic doesn't come up. It's so weird to think about that
sentence before. It's 2020.
I know. It's genuinely so strange. I think, like, if the last while, the last 6 or 7 months or whatever it's been, has kind of shown us anything, at least in Ireland, is just the resilience that musicians here have, and they're just refusing to stop. They're just putting stuff out all the time. It's amazing.
I wonder though if it's not even the fact, like, to refuse, it's like it's a muscle. I'm not talking for myself now, but if people who've been in it for years, how can you suddenly stop? You can't. Yeah. Just like your people build their lives around it, you know, and you could even break it down to people build their mortgages around it. Like, how do they suddenly expect these, you know, how can you? I have such respect for the people that are just still plugging away or trying to figure out every sort of angle to just keep it going, you know.
Yeah.
That's definitely inspiring to see. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Tenacity.
That's a word that you see written down more than you hear it, I think.
That's my big word for the day.
Very good, Niamh. Well, look, we let you go, and thanks for chatting to us.
Thanks so much.
And best luck with the album and your college and everything else that comes your way in the rest of 2020. And thanks for chatting to us.
Thank you so much. And thank you for the album. I really loved it.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
So how about that coffee? You tell me how you're really doing. I'm sure you've some stories you could tell. He said, call if you want to, write if you feel you were never gonna really stay in time. No, I'm never gonna fall back in love. He said, call.
Thanks, Niamh, for your time this week, and do go check Hemet out. It is a fantastic album. Lots to recommend about that. You can listen back to our podcast last week, 104, with the album review in it. So, Andrea, what else has been going on for you this week?
What else has been going on this week? I watched Love on the Spectrum on Netflix. It's a 5-part series about people on the autism spectrum who are starting to date, and what dating is like. And it's really, really, it's great. It is really great, really charming. I learned a lot about autism and how it affects everybody differently, and about the kind of the difficulties that people might have when dating with autism, but also a lot about kind of the just how different people I identify with that as well. I highly, highly recommend it. Everyone in it is absolutely great. I think it was Australian made, or there's a lot of people in it who are Australian. But yeah, I mean, I pressed play on the first episode last night, and I watched all 5 in a row. Like, it's great. What else? I read Scenes of a Graphic Nature by Carolina Donoghue. I tweeted about it yesterday, that I sat down to kind of read I was like, oh, I'll read the first couple of chapters of this, but I'll really space it out. I'll make it my, like, before bed book, and just, like, really take the week to enjoy it. I sat down, opened it, and I read it in one sitting. I absolutely bombed through it. Haven't done that in a while now with a book. It's fantastic.
How long did it take you?
I'd say about 4.5 or 5 hours. And I just looked up.
That's good reading.
Yeah, I stopped to put on the lamp. Like, I couldn't put it down. It's really, really great. If anyone doesn't know, Caroline O'Donoghue is an author who's originally from Cork, which lives in the UK now. She's a columnist and really, really funny, fantastic writer. She's got a podcast called Sentimental Garbage. And I loved her first novel as well, but I really think that this one is a real step up. It's about two English filmmakers who one of them has an Irish dad who's from this fictional island off the coast of Kerry. And something happened in his childhood that she's made a film about. And she and her friend go to the island to learn more about what happened. And it's a proper page turner. Like it's a page turner in the same way that like a really good crime novel or a really good thriller is, but also it's a really brilliant and nuanced look at female friendship and jealousy and homophobia and queerness. It's just fantastic. Like I can't recommend it enough. If you're looking for a book to like really sink your teeth into with really great, fully fleshed out characters, I think that is a really good one. Part of the reason as well why I read that was because I'm putting off reading this, which you can see on your screen now. I'm holding up a copy of Dune.
Hefty tome.
He's a big boy. How many pages is this? So it's 604 pages, but maybe 50 or so of these are appendixes, just like explanations and things. 582 pages. And I've never read it. I like science fiction. I don't read a lot of science fiction anymore. I read a lot in college. And it's just one of those books that people have been recommending to me for years. And I watched the trailer for the new movie. And I thought it looked all right. I thought it looked like it had way too much stuff in it. And I'm definitely...
A lot of stuff. But then I have to say I'm not that familiar with Dune. The story.
Yeah, I'm sort of vaguely familiar from back in the with day. Like roughly like the monsters and the general.
All I really know is that people are never happy with the filmed version.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like, oh, finally, maybe this will be the version that will live up to the book.
Yeah. And I mean, it probably won't be because how do you adopt a book like this unless you're like the size of it?
That's a
unless
brick.
You're Peter Jackson, you're doing over three films. Like, but it is huge, and the writing is absolutely tiny in it as well. So that's my new project.
Andrea is showing me the tiny writing.
It's like my show and tell. It is tiny. Look how small it is.
It's tiny. It's very small.
And there's a lot of like very science fiction-y like names in it that, you know, the kind of names that you don't learn how to pronounce them until the film comes out. I read the first couple of chapters or first couple of pages, and it was just a lot of like, okay, I think it's going to be quite a heavy book, but fuck it. I set myself a goal of 40 books at the beginning of the year and I'm already on 36. So I have time. I have time to read this. Nailing it. And what else have I been?
Did you go see Tenet in the end?
No, I didn't. No.
Okay.
I did not. I will go soon. I just need to find some time. I don't like going to the cinema in the evening. So I have to find a day when I can go like in the middle of the day.
Well, like last time, it sounds like you can just go to your local cinema and you can at any time and it'll be fairly empty.
Like it is, nobody goes there. And if it weren't an Odeon, they would have shut that place down by now, but I'm really glad they didn't. Like it's not the best cinema in the world. I won't mention what cinema it is, but it's an Odeon in South County Dublin. And yeah, I mean, it's just a nice quiet place to go and sit and have things happen in front of your eyes for a few hours. I think that's all I've been reading and doing this week. Yeah.
I rewatched Spinal Tap for the first time.
Oh man, I haven't seen that since I was a kid.
It's very short.
Is it?
I forgot how short it was. Yeah, it's very short.
Like a 90-minute job.
82 minutes. Yeah. And it reminded me because I actually did see this. I think I looked it up, and Michael McKean, who is one of the main actors in it, and comedic actor himself, who also many people would know from Breaking Bad and previous years. He's on your favorite podcast with the James Acaster one. What's the one
off
about
menu?
The food? Yeah,
is he?
That one. He's on that one. Yeah.
Oh, so, sweet.
Taught it. Pass that along to you, seeing if you hadn't seen
no,
it yet.
No, I haven't.
Or listened to it yet. Yeah, that just dropped earlier this month, I think. Lovely. So, yeah, worth to listen. Yeah, it was fun. It's still a great movie, obviously. It's still one of the best in terms of laughing out loud. But yeah, it's probably, yeah, look, it's Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
It's, you know, a classic. Other than that...
I watched
really much
Jurassic
else
Park 2.
Jurassic Park 2. Is that
the Lost World? It's the one that mostly centers around... what is his name? The one who lies down. He says life finds a way in the first one. What's that actor's name? Very charming. Jeff Goldblum. It's yes. him and his daughter, and they have to go back to Jurassic Park. Oh no. And I kind of heard for years people saying that like the second one is shit. Second one is so much fun. I really enjoyed watching it. I thought it was great. It was great fun. It doesn't touch the
yeah,
first one.
Is,
like the first one's a masterpiece, but like...
No, but the next one is the one after that, the one where it's set in like a city and then it gets a bit like loses its way a bit. The third one.
I don't remember seeing the third one. I might have seen it when I was a kid, so I have no idea what happens in that. But at the end of the second one, they bring a dinosaur from Jurassic Park to America in a kind of a King Kong sort of situation where they're like, look, we have a dinosaur. We're going to keep him in an amphitheater and everyone can come and see him. And then the dinosaur breaks loose and starts terrorizing the neighborhood. And I thought that was great. It was really fun. Right. Yeah, really, really enjoyed watching Jurassic Park 2. I recommend it. I don't think it's as bad as people remember it. I think far worse films have been made.
Yeah.
Watch the second one.
The third one isn't even that bad either.
Yeah.
What else have we been doing? I just been listening to a lot of Yeji still. All the original unmixed files or unmixed tracks for the Dua Lipa's future club future nostalgia, whatever it's called, are up now. So all of the full versions of those songs. So I've been listening to the couple that I really like, and the AG one is up there. So I've been listening to her What We Drew mixtape a lot in the last while, and the Boiler Room she did a few weeks ago is fucking brilliant, and you should watch it. It's great crack. If you need a little happy hit, I think you could watch Yeji's Boiler Room from a few weeks ago. It is brilliant.
Cool.
And that's all of it for me, I'd say.
That's it for me too.
Nothing major.
I think we've got a big week next week, so.
Possibly. Yeah. So lots happening. Well, look, whatever it is you're doing in the next 7 days, I hope they are fruitful. Did you get out for more walks?
I did. Yes, I've been going out for walks. Good. Oh, the other thing is we did an interview. I forgot about this, but someone sent me a picture of it today. We did an interview with Virgin Media magazine. And if you get those updates, you can read that interview with Niall and I.
Where would one find that?
Virgin Media magazine. Put that into Google and then put Niall or Nine and you'll probably find it. I'm also in the interview, even though I'm not in the picture.
That was the ad, apparently.
Yeah. Won't take it personally, but okay.
Okay, well,
You can go listen to that or read that if you want to.
Yes,
we talked about music and stuff and podcasting and all that kind of stuff.
Very good. I'm going to look forward to watch Shamrock Rovers play AC Milan tomorrow night.
Oh.
Tonight, if you're listening to it today. That could be a bizarre
LT. That'd be fun. Nice to see AC Milan strange. Play, at least.
Yeah, in Tala, of all places.
Lovely.
So, I noticed they had showed it on the report on the news, and it said, "Welcome to Tala, the Tuscany of Ireland."
Love that.
And I was like, "My, the mind games have started. I love it."
Love that.
So,
Yeah, I was a big fan of that. So, yeah. Okay, so I will chat to you next week, Andrea, and thank you everybody for listening.
Thanks,
and
everyone.
Tuning in and coming back week on week. We appreciate it. That's it from the 909 podcast this week. We're going to finish with a song from Somebody's Child, actually, as remixed by LaBoom. This is We Should Start a War, the remix.
Bye.
See ya.
We're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.